Hello, and welcome to today's Voices for Public Transit telephone town hall. Hope you're having a good day, and thank you for taking time to be part of this town hall. I'm Rose Sheridan from the Voices for Public Transportation team. I serve as the Voices community leader, and I'm currently the vice president for at the American Public Transportation Association. Thanks again for joining us to discuss an issue of critical importance that touches all of us and our every community, the fight for long-term transportation funding. As you're probably aware, the current short-term transportation funding extension expires next week on October 29th. We have 34 short-term extensions over the last 6 years, and this stop-and-start funding is not the way to move our country forward. It is putting safety, our economic competitiveness, and quality of life at risk for each of us and for every American. We need a long-term transportation bill that includes more investment in public transit so that we can not only maintain and improve the public transportation we currently have, but bring more public transit to more communities throughout the country. We're honored today to have Michael Melanese join us. He is president and CEO of the American Public Transportation Association. Michael Melanese has more than 25 years of experience in public transportation. He has led public transit systems around the country as well as in the private sector. He often testifies before Congress and meets regularly with congressional members and senators as well as officials of the Obama administration. He'll be discussing what's happening now in Washington, D.C., and how you can help get the message to Congress that they need to pass a long-term comprehensive transportation bill this year. We strongly believe Congress must pass a long-term bill by the end of this year, even if they aren't able to meet the October 29th deadline. It's critical for lawmakers to hear this message from voters like you. At the end of this town hall, you'll have the opportunity to be connected directly to your Congress member and senator's offices through the Voices for Public Transit legislative hotline, and we'll let you know how to do that later. Before I turn it over to Michael, we're going to do a quick poll of our audience today. So if you want to participate, all you need to do is press the number on your phone keypad that corresponds with your answer. Today's quick question is, how often do you ride public transit? Press 1 if you ride at least once a week, 2 if you ride more than once a week, press 3 if you ride occasionally but less than once a week, and press 4 if you do not ride public transit at all. So give you a chance to do that. Appreciate that. You'll also be free to ask questions as we go. If you have a question at any time, simply press star 3 on your phone's keypad. That's star 3. You'll be put in a queue to speak with a live operator who will take your question on a separate line. After you share your question, you'll be returned to the live call. We'll take as many questions as time permits by the time of the end of the call. So now let me turn it over to Michael Melanese to give you an update on where we stand with our legislation. Michael?
Thank you, Rose. I appreciate that. Great introduction, and thank you to everyone who's joined us on the call today. Rose got right to the main point of our call. All transportation, including public transit, is in crisis. The current short-term transportation funding extension expires in just 2 weeks. This pattern of inconsistent short-term funding impedes our nation's progress on making reliable public transportation accessible to more people in communities of all sizes. Unfortunately, Congress has not been able to break out of gridlock to pass a long-term transportation bill. Instead, they've only been able to agree on a series of short-term patchwork bills since the expiration of the last bill, if you can believe this, all the way back in September of 2009. Now for our listeners, I want to take a moment to highlight exactly why we need long-term transportation legislation, how communities nationwide will benefit if and when Congress finally succeeds in passing a truly comprehensive transportation bill with increased investment in public transit. First, some bad news. This may not shock many of you on this call. America's transportation infrastructure, including public transit systems, as well as America's roads and bridges, they need billions of dollars of maintenance and upgrades. In cities and towns nationwide, transportation projects have been delayed, they've been postponed, they've been canceled because of a lack of consistent funding. And I'm sure everyone on this call is thinking of just such a project in their community. We have a backlog of at least $86 billion in needed bus and rail maintenance alone, and another $170 billion is needed annually to maintain and improve America's roads. These are DOT numbers. Without federal support for public transit, the reliability and safety of current bus and train services could be put into jeopardy. I don't know if you know this, but 38,000 buses, or 56% of the nation's public transit bus fleet could not be replaced without it. Overall, new public transit projects would be stalled all over the country. And many of these projects serve as a catalyst for economic development in every region of the nation. Rail maintenance and expansion, rail car replacement, those would also be significantly impacted. Meanwhile, the demand for public transportation only continues to increase. In 2014, more than $10.8 billion, write that number down, $10.8 billion trips were taken in public transportation, the highest number since 1956. That's why we need Congress to act, and to act soon. Investing in public transportation also has many benefits outside of ridership alone. You all know this. It improves the economy. It helps our environment. It contributes to public health. And it makes our communities more accessible, helping to connect all of us. Public transit benefits everyone, whether we use it or not. And with a good bill from Congress, which we hope to see, we'll see public transit improved in many, many ways, large and small. These changes will not be immediate, and we all know that, but over time you're going to see new services altogether. You'll also see a tighter integration of multiple forms of transportation. And some of these will be made possible by investments in transportation technology like e-tickets and mobile trip planning apps. Public transit investments will reach more Americans. Right now, about 45% of Americans have no access to public transit. Many communities don't have enough service that do have some. A renewed federal commitment to public transportation will mean more public transit in small towns and rural areas in addition to cities and suburbs. This is truly important. We'll also see community improvements tied to public transit investments. Transportation hubs can lead to revitalization and economic growth in communities of all sizes. Public transit investments create jobs and grow our economy. In fact, 73% of the funds used come from the federal government for public transportation flow through to the private sector. They come in the form of capital dollars that go to the private sector to build those buses, those trains, those shelters, the garages, all the things we need to make transit great in our country. And as I mentioned earlier, for several years now, Congress has only passed short-term fixes to address America's public transportation needs. This just isn't going to cut it any longer. We really need to get our nation back on track with transportation infrastructure investments. Currently, the U.S. ranks 26th in the world in terms of our infrastructure investment. There have also been several tragic and destructive events that have shined the light on what happens when we neglect our transportation infrastructure. No one in Congress wants another bridge to collapse or accident because we haven't made the needed investments to improve our systems and to improve their safety. Congress is starting to get this message, and it's just a matter of coming to agreement on how to address the problem on a long-term basis. As many of you know, in July, the Senate passed a long-term transportation bill, putting pressure on the House to do the same. The Senate bill isn't perfect, but it provides a good starting point. As you all know, it takes two bills. We have to have a Senate bill and a House bill, and they come together, hopefully in a conference, we come out with one complete surface transportation bill. Now, a few things have put Congress on a solid path toward passing a bill. First, people like you are getting organized, and you're raising your voices. Members of Congress are hearing this, and they're hearing from your issues, from their constituents, and you all, you've got to keep it up. Congress is also hearing from the business community, from labor leaders, state and local governments, and others. This isn't a partisan or a special interest issue. We all need to get around, and we all need to keep commerce moving. One piece I like to leave with everyone is this: keep your voices being heard. Your senators and representatives are listening. Email, call, write your legislators, tell them you expect Congress to put America's transportation back on track. Ultimately, a comprehensive long-term transportation bill with increased federal investment in public transportation will improve the quality of life for millions of Americans, really for all of us. And that's why it's so important that we all come together to make our voices heard and to stand up for transportation nationwide.
Thank you, Michael. Thanks for your insights and bringing us up to date on this topic. I just want to remind everyone that you can ask a question at any time by pressing *3. I also want to remind everyone that the clock is ticking. The current transportation funding extension expires on October 29th, as Michael mentioned. Our best chance to get out of this cycle of short-term bills and get Congress to act is for you to make your voices heard now. Okay, so we're going to start taking some questions. You can also press *0 to be connected with Voices for Public Transit Legislative Hotline, so you can speak directly with your Congress members' offices today to let them know how you want them to make long-term transportation of funding a priority this year. And so as we wait for questions, I just wanted to bring the first question up for you. And that question is from Doug Gall from Tampa Bay, Florida. Doug, are you available or ready to
ask
a question?
Yes, I am.
Hello, Doug. How are you today?
Yes. I live in Hillsborough County in Tampa Bay, and I want to know what is being proposed for Hillsborough County for public transportation. I'm very aware of global warming. I'm aware of the water situation down here when we have flooding and stuff, and I want to know exactly what is going to be happening for Hillsborough County for getting public transportation here.
Well, Doug, thank you for your question. The primary focus of our call today is to look at nationwide getting reauthorization funding happening. You have a very nice system down there at HART with Hillsborough County. I've been to it. I've been on your trolleys and your buses. It's a very nice system down there. I would direct you to contact the system directly. The general manager is a very nice person and should be happy to give you a briefing on that, on the individual system. But for a nationwide picture, we can certainly talk about that. This is all part of why we need these investments. You've got a lot of congestion and other issues down there that need to be addressed, and that's why we're looking at good public transportation funding nationwide, and that'll raise funding for all of us to make those investment improvements that we need to do.
Thank you, Michael. And as more people are asking questions, I just wanted to give everyone the results from our poll today. 13% of you say that you ride public transit at least once a week. 40% say you ride more than once a week. 27% say you ride occasionally, but less than once a week. And 20% say you don't ride it at all. So as you can see, we have a broad spectrum of here of people that both ride public transit and those who don't, but understand it benefits all of us. So Michael, I have a question online for you that I want to read to you, and then if you could answer. And it's from Donald Perry, and he asked, "How do we ensure that public transportation is adequately funded for the benefit it brings to our nations and local economies?"
Well, that's a great question, Donald. Public transportation is part of a system. So often we get caught in the trap of looking at transportation in silos. We look at just roads or just trains or just waterways or what have you. And we have to look at it all as a system. It all has to work well together. And when it does, it gives an economic boost to our communities. If you have good transportation, you can get people to and from work. You can also get your goods and services to flow freely throughout your community. What we're seeing is two things are really important. As we look at what have cities that have performed well coming out of the economic downturn since 08, we've seen that those cities that had good public transportation infrastructure came back more quickly, and those cities that didn't, more challenged. And it was all about getting access to jobs. If you had access to jobs and you had good, reliable public transportation, you knew what it was going to cost you and your family for transportation. You could budget for that. You could get access to jobs and other things in your community, and your city came back more quickly. We're also finding the second piece is that as new companies come into our cities, and many of them have an international component to them, one of the top five questions they ask is, tell us about your transportation infrastructure. I meet with mayors and governors all the time. I was with two mayors yesterday. And what they talk about is economic competitiveness. If your city has good economic competitiveness, it can attract good businesses. And a top five question is always transportation. So that's why these investments are critical, not just on the local level, but on the national level. If we invest in good transportation infrastructure, we'll attract good businesses and we'll make our communities stronger and our country stronger.
Thanks, Michael. Appreciate that answer there. We also have another online question from Jerome Holm, and he asks, how do we prevent situations like the one that occurred earlier this year with the new governor of Maryland canceling the long-planned and needed Baltimore Red Line light rail?
Well, I certainly appreciate the question, Jerome. One of the things that's critical here is making sure our politicians are heard. One of the most frustrating things, those of us that whose job it is to talk to politicians on a daily basis, one of the most frustrating things we hear is going to someone's office and they'll say, no one has told us why this is important. We haven't heard from our constituents. Now, they may have talked to us. We may have heard from polls or going out in the communities, and people said, this is critical. We have to have this. But if those messages don't get to the elected officials who ultimately make the go or no-go decisions, it doesn't happen. And that's why we're so excited about all the people that are on this call today and all the people that are participants in Voices for Public Transportation. This stuff really matters. And just to give some context, when it comes to the halls of Washington, if you get one or two calls, then they've heard from constituents. If they get five calls, it's a landslide of calls. If they get more than five or they get a series of letters, oh my gosh, they're overwhelmed. It doesn't take a lot of voices, but it takes all of your voices to be heard. And if they're not heard, it gives politicians the opportunity to go, hey, nobody seems to care about this. No one has a passion for it, so I guess we can pass on it. So it is getting that passion out and making it personal as a constituent. If it's personal, it matters. Your voice is heard, and that's why all this work you all are doing is so critical to moving this bill forward. Thank you, Rose.
Thanks, Michael. We have another question from David Allen of South Orange, New Jersey. And he asked the question, has APTA been advocating for a bigger piece of the funding pie for public transit as opposed to highways and bridges?
Oh, it's a great question, David, and one we're often asked. And it comes back to the point I was making earlier. It's all about a system. In the old days, it was all about roads versus transit. We'd all point fingers at each other. We need more. We need more. And the reality is we need all of it to work together. Let's not forget that buses are the backbone of our system. More than half of all riders ride on buses. Buses ride on what? Say it with me. Roads. That's right. So we need the roads and bridges to work together. We often have rail that runs on the bridges as well. It's critical that the whole system work together and we have a good partnership. This is a surface transportation bill. It's not just a public transit bill. It's important for all of our voices to be heard. So we all need more money. We all need a bigger investment. And these numbers that we're asking for, they're not based on things we're wishing for. They're based on actual data on real needs we have in our communities. And you all know that from your own towns, the investments you need in your cities. And that's why we have to have a good surface long-term transportation bill. Thank you, Rose.
Thanks again, Michael. And we're getting lots of questions here. And we have a question from Greg from Sherman Oaks, California, that we're gonna, that I believe is on the line for you. So are you live, Greg?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hi, Greg.
Great.
Hi. I'm here.
Would you ask your question, Greg?
Here's my question. In 2009, Senator Dianne Feinstein, in the stimulus bill that year, had a provision that could be called public transportation vouchers for clunkers. This was an idea that was based on the new car cash for clunkers, which basically rewarded people for buying a car with slightly better mileage and giving them a few thousand dollars for it. Most of that went for foreign-made cars, by the way. This provision would have rewarded people who turned in their clunkers not with a money for a new car or a slightly newer car, but rather with a potentially lifetime public transit voucher or pass in the metropolitan area they lived in, which would have much better outcomes both publicly and for the people who did it. This was, in fact, I learned about this. I made the original proposal, but I didn't know it was in the bill until someone at APTA in an email told me about it, and it was in the bill until it wasn't. I've never been able to determine why it was kicked out of the bill. I suspect new car makers and car dealers had something to do with it, but I still think it's a good idea, and I'm wondering if in some form transit vouchers for clunkers could be resurrected in the future to benefit the environment and people and the transportation infrastructure all at once.
Well, Greg, there's a question I didn't expect to hear coming, so thank you for introducing the question and also the proposal and the passion you have for this. I think it's an interesting idea. Certainly a lot of it all comes down to the details, and as we've all seen in the process of bills over the years, you can see a lot of pieces that fit in initial versions of the bill that ultimately don't make it through the conference process. We can all list lots of things that our favorite pieces that were in there that we wish were there that didn't make it. But certainly ideas that, you know, anything that can stimulate ridership is good. Certainly we don't want to get into a battle with automakers where we say, you need to pick us over them. It's all about making the system work together, but we're certainly open to all kinds of different ideas, and if you want to talk with us more about that, we'll be happy to talk to you offline and get some more information on that. And my guys that were involved in that bill back in 2009 maybe can provide some more insight in that discussion as well. Thank you, Greg.
Thank you, Michael. We still have a lot of questions coming in both online and through the telephone. And one person has asked whether we could provide them with Michael's opening remarks. And we'll make sure that we put those on the Voices for Public Transportation community there. So thanks for that, and we'll make sure that's there. Thank you for the question from Norma there. I also wanted to see if Judith Brown from Norfolk, Virginia was on the line, and she has a question about how do we contact local officials. Judith, are
yes.
you there?
I'm here. Thank you.
Hi,
I live in a district where my two U.S. senators and my representative in the House of Representatives nearly always vote in favor of funding for public transit and for transportation in general. I feel I don't really need to spend my time writing to them, but I'm unable to get through to other senators or representatives because they won't take emails or from people who don't live in their district.
Oh, that's a great point. First of all, it's always important to not take your own members for granted. I think it's fantastic that you have members of your delegation that are so supportive, and what we all wish we had that. But I'm a Virginia resident as well, so I'm happy to hear from someone from the state I live in. But it's important that you continue to pass that message to them as well and to help give them talking points, help personalize it, help them understand not only your support of a public transportation, but give them a story about why it matters to you and your community. Because you can't believe how often we get into these listening sessions or I'll sit with a room of a half dozen members of Congress and they'll share a story. They'll say, hey, I heard from Judith from my district and she was telling me about this, and the other members of Congress go, hey, that's great. So even if you can't reach out to other members of Congress, Sometimes the best thing to do is just share your local story, personalize it so that they hear it. But also don't give up. You know, you can certainly send your letters in. I know it's a little harder sometimes with members outside the district, especially when you do it online. But those voices are certainly important. But even if you can just focus on the people in your district, that would make a tremendous difference. Thank you, June.
And Michael, I would just add there also is that, you know, there are some more critical committees that are focusing on this bill, and that perhaps we could also reach out to some of the committee chair people on those committees, and we certainly could make those names available on our Voices website for people.
Oh, absolutely. Certainly with the House Transportation Infrastructure Committee and the House Ways and Means Committee and the other committees that may be involved as we get into negotiations, if there's a House bill that comes up with the Senate bill, that's critical. And you're very right. If we're talking to the chair people, they'll listen to members from all over the country, and it's a great point. Thank you, Rose.
Thank you. So Michael, we have a few questions about how do we fund this bill. And so we're going to ask David from Boston if he'd like to ask his question.
Hello, David.
David,
how are you? David?
Maybe we lost David there. David, are you there?
Oh, hello. Yes, hi.
Hi, David.
Yes. Hi, how are you? So my question is, I'm calling from Boston. My question is, I understand that the federal gas tax has not been raised in close to 25 years. And I think there's automatic kind of gut reaction against raising any kind of taxes. And so how can we educate people so they can understand that, yes, the gas tax needs to be raised, but that money is going to support infrastructure improvements, public infrastructure improvements, and how can we also convince our local political leaders that it's not necessarily political suicide to propose raising the gas tax, because that's something that, it hasn't kept up with inflation. It's not, it makes up a smaller and smaller percentage of funds every year. That's something that, it seems like that should be a no-brainer, raise the gas tax, have that money earmarked towards transit, which I believe it is, specifically public transit. But how can we convince people that may not be, as public transit savvy as we are, the people that don't ride public transit on a regular basis?
Oh, David, excellent, excellent question. One of my favorite topics, actually. So thank you for asking. And for those who aren't as well-versed as David, who's obviously quite skilled in this area, the gas tax hasn't been raised in more than 20 years, almost approaching 25, as he talked about, and absolutely is earmarked. Actually, the 20%, when we talk about that transit gets a 20% share, actually has its roots in Ronald Reagan. He said, we need a nickel for America, 1 cent for transit, and 4 cents for roads and bridges. And that's the origin of the 20% for transit. The nickel for America, penny for transit. And so over time, that grew to the 2.86 cents that we get for transit now through the program, the 18 cents that we get on the federal gas tax for gasoline. And it hasn't moved in a long time. But the reality is at this point, it doesn't make it's not a good benefit for us to take sides in what's feasible or not feasible. We want to leave all the paths open for Congress to get the job done and pass a long-term transportation bill. And we've talked to a lot of elected officials. My gosh, I've given the gas tax lecture, dozens of times and done it in the Capitol. We've even signed on to bills from Earl Blumenauer and others that have talked about it, about saying we'd be supportive if a gas tax was raised. And it would take about 12 to 15 cents to 12 would keep us just on parity. 15 cents would let us move forward and do good things. But the reality is right now there isn't a great appetite for raising the gas tax, even though we've got a certainly low fuel prices compared to what we had in the last few years. The thing right now is to focus on getting more funding for transportation. And whether it comes from gas tax, it comes from a myriad of other funding programs, we're less concerned about the where it comes from and more concerned about getting the investment so we can raise the transportation investment we need in this country. And if it's a combination of gas tax revenues and other funds, that works as well. The nice thing about a gas tax, it's a user fee. People understand it. I use the roads and paying for it. It goes back to the roads and transit. I get that. But certainly at the end of the day, we don't think it's in our best interest to be married to one specific mechanism. We're open to all of them and let Congress pick the ones that they're most comfortable with, that they think politically they can get through right now. At the end of the day, the discussion is about let's increase funding for public transportation, let's get a good bill, and then have them figure out how to fund it the best way possible. Thanks for your question, David.
Thanks, Michael. And there was several questions on the gas tax, which I think you answered very succinctly. We have quite a few people from rural areas that are asking about public transit in rural areas. Michael, could you talk, Rob Friedman particularly asked about any federal studies or federal benefits about public transit in rural areas. Could you talk to that topic a little bit?
Oh, absolutely, Rose. There's several arguments to be made about what about all those people that aren't served by public transit, the 45% that don't get any? And first off, access to public transportation needs to reach out to more Americans. It's simply unacceptable that 45% of our nation's population has no access to public transit. Greater federal support for public transit will mean that mass transit options can reach more American communities. For smaller towns, suburbs, rural areas, this might be a small-scale bus system, or it could even be a demand-responsive transportation where you can schedule the bus pickup if you physically aren't able to get out to the bus route. And we've got rail that reaches many mid-sized cities as well. But public transit funding could also make sense to our nation as a whole economically. If we can improve our nation's economy, we can make working and reaching work more efficient, and also through good public transportation. And greater public transportation also will limit increase in traffic congestion and will enable freight to move more efficiently and effectively. And let's be honest also, as we look at many places in rural America are aging, and if people are able to age at home, it's a more efficient and effective way for them to continue to live out their lives, to have a good, healthy community. They can be more active in their community. And if they have good public transportation options, then they're able to have a healthier town and live healthier lifestyles. And so we think having good public transportation in the rural is just as important as it is in our urbanized areas. Thanks, Rose.
Thank you, Michael. And I just wanted to remind people that you can talk directly to your elected officials right now by just pressing *0, and you'll be connected to the Voices for Public Transit hotline, and that will bring you directly into your congressperson's offices. Again, that's *0. Thank you. We have a few questions about the involvement of the private sector in public transit. And I thought that, Michael, you would, this was an online question that talks about what roles might P3s, public-private partnerships, play in the role of funding public transit in the future?
Ah, P3s, a great question. Thank you for passing it on from the Internet. P3s, public-private partnerships, very important to note that all three P's are the same size. And why do we say this? Because it's all about shared risk and about making a project work well together. Public-private partnerships are a concept that are happening around the globe. It's not just here. It's their projects all over the world. And they tend to be larger scale projects because they have to have a revenue stream that goes with them. Where you often see public-private partnerships, the early ones are things like toll roads, where you would have the private sector would invest in the toll road and building a road, and then the revenue stream to pay back their investment would be the tolls that would come off of that. Now, some things for public transportation infrastructure make sense in that area, and some things don't. If you're building a bus garage, it's probably not a great place for a PPP because there's not a lot of revenue that comes back the other way from a bus garage. But other projects can make sense, or if it's part of a more comprehensive project, then that makes sense. It's all about how do we leverage the dollars. There's certainly a place for PPPs. We can look at the Eagle P3 project in Denver, and I'm sure we've got some people on the phone from Colorado. The Eagle P3 project, incredible project, biggest P3 in the nation, and transit is the one that's leading that, and we've seen great programs that have come out of that. What we have to do is we have to learn to speak that investment language, and as we learn to do that, and it makes that we can find the ways to make the public part, the private part, and the partnership part all equal, as far as risk and economic return for the private sector, we can use it as a tool. It's not an end-all, be-all. It's not a replacement. And let's not forget that financing and funding are very, very different terms. Funding, grants that come from the federal government, help us to pay for things, typically for capital. Financing is lending, that's borrowing money to pay for things. We have to be careful how much money we borrow, just like in our private lives. We have to do that in the public sector as well, so that we maintain good credit for our public entities, so that we don't build up too much debt. It's okay to take on debt in the public sector, but we have to be thoughtful about it as we make our investments in the capital side. So PPPs, good tool in a tool belt, not a solution for everything. Can be used in the right applications, but it takes a lot of work to do it, and we're certainly engaged in that process. So a good question, and certainly if there's more follow-up on that, we can certainly put a little primer on PPP up on our Voices for Public Transportation website.
Thank you, Michael. That answered several questions about just private and public financing of public transportation. We also have another question online about just particularly about the bill. And the questioner asks, what happens if Congress doesn't pass a long-term bill? Can we make do going from one short-term bill to the next?
Oh, my gosh. Stop already. We need a long-term bill. Short-term bills have already had consequences for America's transportation infrastructure. Our states, our municipalities, our regional public transit authorities, they cannot reasonably plan and execute large-scale projects without dependable funding. I had this discussion with two mayors yesterday. We're just saying we can't plan. We cannot dedicate our local resources if we don't know what our federal partners are doing. You don't want to begin digging or laying a track or building a bridge and then have them stop. And we've seen many states suspend new transportation projects in the face of expiring transportation funding. We need multi-year funding so officials don't face expiring funds year after year. And as we look at this, let us not forget that good public transportation funding is a package, and it's made up of local passenger fares. Let's not forget the passenger fares every day, big part of it. You've got the local funding that comes in. It's often from a sales tax or from property taxes, ad valorem, things like that. Then there's often the states or the counties participate at some level. Not everywhere. I think there's four states that don't, but most states participate even a little bit. And then there's the federal piece. It takes all those partners working together to give us a good, robust economic package for public transportation. But this continuing to go from short-term to short-term bill, the analogy I like to use is this, Rose, and you all can feel free to use this one if you want to. To me, the short-term plans that we've been doing now, more than 30 of them, have been exactly if I were to get into a car in San Francisco and try to drive to Washington, D.C. by only having 3 gallons of gas at a time. I would spend all my time on surface streets looking for the next gas station, worried about where's the next gas station, where's the next gas station, instead of getting on the freeway with a full tank of fuel and driving in the most efficient, safe, and effective way to get there. That's how we're looking at funding our nation's infrastructure right now. It doesn't work. It's not the right thing to do. We need a good long-term bill so our communities that are our partners can also make good long-term investments so we can efficiently and effectively build this nation's infrastructure. Thanks, Rose.
Thanks, Michael. And here's another question, a little bit more about what people can do to help get this bill across the goal line. William Hamilton has a question from South Carolina, and he's really asking about what are some of the initiatives or other things that we can do here and what we've done. So let's see if William can come live on the phone. William, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hello, William.
Great. Fine. We were at Mark Sanford's office last April, and we actually got in to see them, and he Skyped with us, which was unusual.
Wow. Okay.
We hit him at 5 a.m. in the morning on TV, and we hit him pretty hard, and we clearly shook him up. But what really shook Mark Sanford up was when I brought up the senior citizens community, which did not get a shut-in transportation van that they had been trying to get for about 4 years. And it was half-funded by the feds, but they couldn't find any local funding. So they're people that are literally prisoners in their homes, senior citizens. They can't get to the senior citizen center to socialize or get to a nearby transit stop. And I never saw him as shaken, and I've tried to shake Mark Sanford up for a while, as when he realized that the senior citizens were organizing. It's a powerful community. They come together socially a lot. They have a pretty intense sense of entitlement. And a lot of them, in many places, understand they're going to need transit or they're going to be forced into a nursing home. And so we're working with them now. It's a slow process with that age group, but once they know what they're doing, they tend to be very intense.
Well, William, you just set a great example for so many people on this call. Congratulations to you for going to his office, and you hit on a really good point. You can hit on the local office just as powerfully as you can in the Washington, D.C. office and visit with them and tell that local story. It's great.
Yes. Thank you, William. Michael, we have just a few more questions we'll take here. One online, there's several online that are talking just about our transportation system, our multimodal system, and particularly about complete streets, asking about how a community can be healthy and livable and what we need to do in the transportation bill to encourage a really multimodal system. Any thoughts on that topic?
Well, certainly. It's all about all of it working well together. And so we have to get away from this whole silo thing and we just make our roads better or just make our transit better. We have to make our cities walkable. And as we look at what are our cities looking like, they're changing dramatically. We're seeing a lot more people moving back into the downtowns. You know, people fled downtowns, they went to the cul-de-sac suburbs, and now they're coming back, and they're coming back in kind of both ends of the genealogical spectrum. They're coming back as millennials. Young people are populating our downtowns. They're the largest generational base of people in the history of America. The millennials are a huge population group, and they're populating downtowns. They want walkable communities. They want transportation options. And so they're driving a lot of what's going on downtown. At the same time, baby boomers are also coming back into our downtowns and saying, I don't want to have to drive as much. I want to have a smaller home. I want to live maybe in a nice condo downtown. And so we're seeing both ends of the spectrum. And they're saying, I want a walkable community or want to have a good transportation set of choices. And so we're seeing this drive, these choices that as we make greater investments, whether it's circulator buses, shared use bikes, shared use cars, you know, we're not anti-car. We're all about everything working together. And if you have a community you can walk in, and you've got a shared use bike, you can take transit or other things, you have a very vibrant community. And as employers are looking at what are places that my employees want to be, it's a great example. And as we look at, take a huge name, everybody knows, the Marriott Corporation. They have a huge headquarters near us in D.C. They're looking at moving their building to a place that is more accessible and more walkable as they attract a new younger workforce, the new generation of millennials into their organization. And they've put their communities on notice that say, we want to go to a place where people want to come and walk and be able to walk to lunch and do other things in their community and walk home or take transit easily, and transit's a key component of that. So our cities are changing dramatically, and we're seeing that with employers in cities large and small all across the nation. Having a good, well-thought-out, complete streets-type community is critical to your city being competitive and attracting new opportunities. Did I answer the question there, Rose?
Yes, very well. Thank you. I think it was really trying to get that whole point of the whole multimodal system there. And this next question is really about perhaps our future. An online questioner is asking about what's the future of high-speed rail in America. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, certainly high-speed rail is absolutely a component of the whole system working well together. APTA, we recently did a survey that found an overwhelming majority of Americans say they would likely use high-speed rail service if it was available. And there's pent-up demand for this option that's available in so many European and Asian countries. I got a chance to ride the Shinkansen high-speed rail, the 50-year-old high-speed rail network in Japan here recently, and it's nothing like it. It's spectacular. It's fantastic. And the more I know many Americans have had the opportunity to ride high-speed rail as they've traveled across Europe or Asia or other places and found it to be a great experience. And as we know, California, they recently broke ground on high-speed rail. That's going to eventually connect Los Angeles to San Francisco, a very highly used corridor, and it's slated to begin service in 2029. And there have been other discussions about high-speed rail in Texas and another one in Florida. as we look at a network of high-speed rail lines, it could really transform our nation for the better. Of course, we still have a long way to go, and our nation would benefit tremendously when Congress finally passes a multi-year transportation bill. But unfortunately, what we're hearing right now is that high-speed network additional funding for it is probably not in the current bill. So it's going to be our next battle. But without political will, we're more likely to see an incremental development in high-speed rail over the next century rather than a bold, unified rail plan. And as we talk about high-speed rail, we have to look at it in segments. We're not going to have a high-speed train you take from one end of the country to the other. It's about segments, and usually in the 300-mile or less range. And if you've got a good segment there, a good pair of cities or a string of cities together, like in the Northeast Corridor, oh, my gosh, high-speed rail could be transformative and make transportation options for people work so much better. But, again, it comes back to the whole discussion we had. It has to work as a system. High-speed rail doesn't work alone. And as we see what they're doing in California, they're putting in connections. So you're going to see the bus and rail systems that crisscross the high-speed rail network, they'll be evolving and changing. They're also improving the commuter rail that's going to operate along the same corridors. So a lot of side benefits to it. Just like the space program, we saw lots of benefits off of that. We're going to see that out of high-speed rail as well.
Thanks, Michael. Appreciate talking about what's going on in the future. We've had a few questions just back to the bill a little bit, and just really what's your opinion or what do you think are the chances of getting something passed this year and getting to conference? Paul McGregor asked that question of you.
No, thank you for the question. I appreciate it. I feel very confident we're going to see a long-term bill. We've got the Senate already passed their bill, the DRIVE Act, and while not perfect, it has a lot of good pieces in it, and they heard from the constituents. This is the most important thing off this call. They heard from their constituents. And I and my staff and my members all went to visit with members of Congress, and I met with all the key leadership on the Senate side and on the House side as well. They talked about how they've heard from their members, how it made a difference. And so we saw increases in funding like for bus and bus facilities. We saw the ability to have discretionary funding for bus programs. These are critical and so important for a good future public transportation network. And now the people in the House need to hear that as well. Now we're hearing that as early as next Thursday. They're going to do a markup of the bill on the House side. And so now is the time to talk to your members on the House side. Let them know how important this is. The time to wait is not now, as Rose is talking about. You're going to be able to connect with your member of Congress right after this call or right on this call. You'll be able to hit some buttons and make that happen. Now is that time. They have to hear how important it is. And not just passing the bill, getting an increase in that funding. We need a long-term bill. We need that funding. We think we're going to get a bill this year. We're not going to make the October 29th deadline. That's very unlikely that's going to happen. But we'll have another short-term extension. We're going to get a bill through. It's one of the few active bills right now that crosses all across the country because everybody benefits from it. And it's a great thing they can take into the election cycle saying, look at this good multimodal transportation bill we passed. So make it a great bill. And let's all make sure we make that investment of calling our members of Congress. We want them to invest in America. Let's invest a little bit of our time. Tell them, make that investment. Put more money in public transportation so we can make our country great and be more economically competitive in the future. How was that, Rose?
Thanks, Michael. I think that is a really great way to ending our call and thanking everyone for all their time on the call. I would just remind everyone, just as Michael said, you can call your member of Congress right now. That's by hitting *0. *0. Really, with the bill being just in play right now, that's absolutely critical. And again, just thank you for joining us. I hope we provided you information that will help you to make informed choices here and really call your Congress people. You can also visit our Voices for Public Transit site, voicesforpublictransit.org, anytime and get information about where things stand and what you can do. Besides writing emails, you can send letters to the editor, which would reach a larger audience than just your regular congressperson. And you can also send emails and also obviously make these calls. So again, thank you for your participation. It's really critical that you take part in talking to your congresspeople and making sure that we move forward with a bill this year. Thanks again, Michael, for all your great insights, and thank you to everyone. Have a great afternoon.
Thank you, everyone, as well. Really appreciate it. Great work, everyone.